This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to episode number 3 of Jeff Lawrence Wrestling. I am your professor slash co-host, JT, here tonight. And joining me, as always, is my students that I find very attractive, and that is Jeff Machado. Jeff, how are you?
You said you were the co-host. Does that mean I'm a co-host?
Of course.
I kind of thought it was a host and guest type situation.
No, if it was a guest, you'd be out every, you know, we'd be rotating. But it's all you. We're in this together.
Oh, so we're both hosting. We're like equals.
Yeah, like Al Giroux said, we're in this love together. So if you're listening to episode 3, I'm guessing you've probably heard episodes 1 and 2. At least I hope you have. So we're not going to really go through the format or the goal again, as we've done that twice now. But basically, Jeff's never watched wrestling in his life until about a month ago. And I'm taking him through the history of wrestling chronologically starting in 1984. And when I say history of wrestling, obviously it's pretty much just like North American wrestling. We're going to watch WWF, some NWA, WCW.
No Lucha Libre.
No Lucha Libre, some ECW. Someday maybe I'll have someone come on here and teach you about Lucha in Japan, but it won't be me. So the first episode, we jumped ahead and did the Mega Powers angle just to have a introductory course to what would be going on. And then last episode, we went back to 1984, watched a bunch of matches from WWF from 84 and 85. So this week, we wanted to mix things up a little bit, and we teased this at the end of episode 2, but I took Jeff down to the Carolinas, down to Jim Crockett Promotions, and we're going to watch a handful of matches from 85 into 86 from Jim Crockett. I wanted to culture shock Jeff, I wanted to mix things up a little bit, and I'm very curious about his thoughts. So this episode isn't going to be as much match-focused as we've had in the last couple weeks. I think this one's going to be more talking about just the generalities of the NWA, the differences between that and the WWF, some of the guys you saw versus like breaking down the matches. I think that's, since it's your first NWA foray, I feel like maybe that's a better way to go about it.
Yeah, I can't really focus on matches because my brain is such a hodgepodge of just culture shock after watching what you made me watch.
It's a lot of different stuff, and it stands out very differently from, from what WWF was, especially in this era. So before we get to the match, just like quick thoughts on what the major differences that stuck out to you with the NWA, what really like was glaring to you when you watched this, and did you like the overall presentation or not? And you know, what did you think of what it was?
To ask me if I liked it or didn't like it is difficult because sometimes I really liked it and sometimes I really didn't like it. And I guess the best way I can summarize my thoughts are, have you ever had a dream where you were kind of waking up from the dream and it was like a bad dream and you could understand what was going on and you got like the sick pit in your stomach?
Yeah.
That's kind of what I felt like. It was like, it's like the Bizarro world. It's like Superman's Bizarro world. I was watching it and everything was weird. Everything was like black. There was no lights on the audience. It was just like blackness and this stage and like the mat is a different color. The mat is blue and the ropes are black. And the guys just look weird, and the announcers sound different. And I don't know, it just gave me a very sickly, uneasy feeling. But there were moments where I was like, oh, I kind of like these guys. I wish that I could see them more. And maybe I will, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely more of a sports-based format versus like what WWF was becoming at this point. It was a lot more entertainment, a lot more garish.
Yeah, I noticed that the acting is much, much worse. And I was wondering if Did the WWF just get the better actors, or did they just focus on coaching up the acting more? Or
yeah, I think so. Like NWA was much more sporty in the fact that they were more focused on like high quality wrestling matches, like really focused on mat work and, you know, telling the story within the match. WWF was all about presentations, stories, the flamboyant characters, because they were aiming. The audiences were very different. The WWF in the 80s were trying to capture like the children, you know, in pop culture and become a phenomenon in the pop culture world. Whereas Jim Crockett, they were just trying to be a successful wrestling territory. That's what wrestling was. It wasn't
Jim Crockett a guy?
Yeah. So he was the guy who owned the promotion. Jim okay. Crockett.
So he's Jim the promoter. Crockett is like the promoter. Vince McMahon.
Yeah, he was a Vince McMahon.
Of the WCW. But it wasn't called that?
Not yet.
It was always NWA.
It's Jim Crockett Promotions, which is part of the National Wrestling Alliance. Remember, the NWA is like a governing board that had a bunch of territories within them.
How can you have an alliance if everyone's fighting each other?
The overall board is the alliance.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? The people aren't an alliance.
Well, if you're a fighter in the NWA, the National Wrestling Alliance...
It's an alliance of promotions.
You're fighting another guy who's in an alliance, so you're not really aligned with each other.
No, the territories are aligned.
It's very confusing.
The territories are aligned. So Jim Crockett, Georgia...
Jim Crockett is North Carolina.
Right. So North Carolina, Georgia, Texas, St. Louis, like they're all... They have territories in all these different areas, and they're all under the banner. Those align to make the NWA.
Did NWA wrestling
come from... We're going to crack this nut at some point.
Did the wrestling NWA come from the popular rap group or vice versa? Or was it just a coincidence?
I think it's coincidental. The NWA, the wrestling one, was around
for... What are the odds that there would be two famous NWAs in the mid-80s?
Because the NWA...
Someone stole some from someone.
The wrestling NWA was around from like the 40s or whatever. Probably earlier than that even.
So the rappers are thieves is what you're saying.
I didn't put those words in your mouth. Yes, I mean, whatever you want to say. They use the same initials. If you want to call them thieves, those are your words, not mine. But
I would like to imagine Ice Cube sitting around with his homies watching.
There's a good chance. A lot of entertainers and rappers grew up as wrestling fans. So, I mean, there's a good chance Ice Cube watched NWA with his grandfather back in the day. And, you know, he thought that was a cool name. Anyway, we're way off track. So... WWF marketed more towards kids. NWA was more of that old school, just...
Yeah, like, there were no theme songs.
Right.
I kind of missed that stuff. All of a sudden, the guys are just in the ring, and the guy's like, oh, these guys are wrestling each other.
And even the announcers, like you said, are much more...
There's no pomp and circumstance. Right. Shout out to Savage.
Very good. They're calling it more like a... Like, they're analysts at a sporting event versus, like, bombastic personalities. Like, you know.
Yes, but is it viewed by the wrestling community to be higher quality wrestling?
Yes.
Really?
In-ring, when you qualify as work rate, which is how good of a wrestler, worker you are, the NWO is always viewed as the work rate territory promotion, however you want to word it. Whereas the WWF, the matches, they worked on many levels, but in other levels, they were much more plotting, much more geared towards television a lot of the time. Just NWA just didn't look it like that. They were just out there having great wrestling matches, whether it's mat work, whether it's taking to the air, whether it's, you know, whatever. Like, you know, if you look at the average even length of their matches, like the matches
matches are so long.
Right. I mean, like, you're
Are they doing anything differently than the WWF matches? I mean, I feel like everyone just kept grabbing each other and there's a lot of body slamming going on. There's a lot of sleeper holds.
It's much more like catch as catch can, ground based, submission based. And, you know, there's an audience for that wrestling. Like, I was watching one of the matches we're going to talk about, and I really liked, you know, they focus a lot on like targeted limb work. Like, a guy hurts, like Ronnie Garvin hurt his hand,
yes.
Right? And they batter and beat the shit out of the hand the whole match.
You had the guy with the hand and the guy with the leg. Right. And they just kept beating the crap out of each other.
Right. And that's the idea
and
the
that's
theory.
That's quote unquote good wrestling, is targeted limb work.
Yeah, because you are picking a body part, you're trying to weaken your opponent by destroying that piece of their body, taking them apart.
Why don't you just target the guy's head?
Yeah, some people do. They do target the head, but it might not be as easy to work over the head. You know, guys protecting their head. WWF, you know, there was some of that, but it was more basic. Like, the guy just might kind of hold the arm, grab an arm bar. And you'll see it more as we move forward. I mean, not as much, because some of the WWF stuff we're watching, like, I'm picking and choosing the best. Like, we'll probably do episodes where we do bad shit just to show you what it's like. But NWA was known more for, yes, being a work rate, work heavy, more focus on the in-ring action versus the pomp and
their
circumstance.
Their target audience was the people that, you know, really appreciated high quality, like Olympic style wrestling.
Yeah, and I mean the Southern fans and the Southern promotions that weren't about that. They were into brawling, like Memphis was a lot of brawling and parlor tricks, but like the Carolinas and Georgia, yeah, a lot of it was just very mad. And they still tell good stories and they have very good characters still, but it's not. They're not outlandish characters. They're defined characters in whether they're good or bad and what they're about. Like, I mean, you can't sit here and say, like, Dusty Rhodes isn't a good character, even though he's just himself, pretty much. You know, like, just turned up a bit.
Love Dusty Rhodes. We'll get to that later.
So why don't we talk about the first match we watched? And we had teased last episode too that we wanted to talk about blood in wrestling. And I think this is the perfect match to bring that up if you're interested in talking about that. And that is Magnum TA versus Tully Blanchard from Starrcade 85, U.S. title on the line, inside a cage, I quit match. What did you think? Do you want to talk about Tully and Magnum at all? Do you want to talk about the mat? Like, where do you want to lead this?
Well, all right. I'll start off by saying it was a good – if you're going to talk about – a cage match, which we already kind of went over with the Andre match last episode, and an I quit match. If you combine those two things, that's pretty much cruel and unusual punishment.
But did you notice a difference with the cage versus WWF where that was escape? Like I had said here, the point of the cage was to keep everyone else out and just let these guys be contained and murder each other, basically. Whereas WWF, the whole goal was to escape the cage, you know, or whatever, versus more of these guys have been fighting so much and it's getting out of control. We need to contain them inside this cage so they can't fight all over the place.
Yeah, it was definitely a big difference. But the fact is they were contained in this cage. And to make somebody, I don't know, like you and I have known each other a long time. Mm-hmm. I don't care what the challenge is. I am never, ever saying I quit. It could be a fight. It could be a game of darts. It could be an academic decathlon, a basketball game to a million points. I will never, ever say I quit. I don't care what happens. So for this guy, Tully, to agree to lose this match, how much money must they have paid him? Either that or he has no self-respect. That is absolutely cruel.
To say I quit?
You have to actually say I quit into a microphone? No, screw you.
He kind of doesn't say it, though, right? He kind of just yells. Ah!
Well, yeah, you couldn't hear him like audibly say I quit, but the referee was there, and he was like, oh, he said it.
I mean, it's simulated violence. I mean, it was a pretty gory sight, right? He had the cut, and he was jamming the broken wood into the cut. And
I don't care how many pieces of wood you jam into my forehead. This guy just had to sell out his entire integrity.
You got nothing going on, though. Like, Tully's going to come back and wrestle again. He can't risk major injury. That's his end of his career.
Why would he ever agree to this match is my point.
Well, that's what the storyline dictated. I mean, it was, heated.
Maybe I'll watch one or two Tully Blanchard matches for the rest of my life, but I will be on my deathbed. I'll be 90 years old or 60, more likely. And I'll say, Tully Blanchard was a pussy. He lost that I quit match.
Yeah.
Fuck that guy.
But see, that's what you're supposed to feel. He's a heel, a hated heel, and heels by nature, no matter how tough and badass or cool they look, are meant to be like chicken shitty in the end. So they're meant to be the ones that end up giving in and tapping out while the face will prevail because they'll never give in. So you're a natural babyface, mate. We always pegged you as a heel, but mate, you're a natural babyface.
I think I've always been a natural babyface. Where's this heel concept coming from?
I think a lot of people would probably classify you as a heel if I had to ask, but they don't know the real you. You're an anti-hero.
I'm sitting here talking about wrestling in my U.S. postal uniform.
Yeah.
What's more babyface than that?
It is very. That's Americana. I'm going to step back for a minute.
All right. What was the backstory? Because you always ask me, did I understand the story the match was telling? These guys seem to hate each other, but then I'm thinking maybe there's just their personality. And Tully's just like a dick, and Magnum just this intense guy. Like, wah.
Right. So Magnum had won the U.S. title.
Is that like the WWF?
Intercontinental title. It's like the second level title.
The U.S. title isn't the title.
No, the world. The one Ric Flair and Dusty Rhodes are fighting over, the NWA World Heavyweight Championship.
Oh, my. This wasn't even like the main one.
No.
This was the Ultimate Warrior one.
Right.
I feel cheated now. I thought this was like the big thing.
No, that makes it even great. Like, that puts more value on that title because these guys are willing to kill themselves over even that gold because that's how prestigious the gold was at that time. Everyone wanted the title because it meant more money and more success.
So it was just about the title. There was no, like, you know.
No, it was personal.
Tully didn't bang Magnum's wife or something.
No, but Tully stole the title from him. He defeated him, cheating. And then Tully refused to give him a rematch, and he was finally backed into a corner and forced to fight Magnum at the biggest show of the year.
Did Starrcade come before WrestleMania or vice versa?
Starrcade was first. 1983 was the first one.
And is that just a play on arcade? Like kids play at the arcade and there's stars there? Or is Starrcade a real word? that I don't
know. I don't think it's a real word. I think like Dusty Rhodes or something probably made it up.
It's got to come from somewhere.
Yeah, I don't think it has anything to do with an arcade. I'll say that much. I think it's just a cavalcade of stars,
Was this star aired cavalcade in the same time, like springish?
No, this was always Thanksgiving night. And then WWF creates a pay-per-view called Survivor Series that moves to Thanksgiving night and then Thanksgiving Eve to compete with Starcade.
And they just squash Starcade off the face of the planet?
Well, we'll get there. It's a pretty interesting story. I can give you the Cliff's Notes now. But so they were very big into counter-programming each other to fuck with each other. And Vince was pretty heavy in with the pay-per-view guys. And so they ran against each other. And Vince made pay-per-view companies choose. And he basically said, if you don't run my show instead of theirs, you won't get WrestleMania or any of my other shows. Like, fuck you.
Wow. That's ballsy.
And that's when there were more cable distributors, so you could pick and choose. You know, like nowadays, there's like fucking three or whatever. But back then, you know, they were all regional, all over the place.
I literally have... I'm like 5 years old when it comes to how cable works.
Yeah.
I didn't know there were pay-per-view distributors. I thought you had a product, you filmed it, and then you put it and you just...
Well, the cable company has to carry the pay-per-view on their company. Like Dimension Cable back in the day.
So when you pay for a pay-per-view, you're paying the cable company? I always thought you were just paying WWF.
They get a cut.
This is crazy.
Right, the cable company gets a percentage.
Like, you just watched a pay-per-view that I missed. Why do they do pay-per-views and they can just air stuff on cable?
To make money, because they still get a cut. But WWF or WWE created their own network, which is the app that you watch to watch a lot of stuff, and they air everything on there for the subscription rate. So they pretty much cut out the middleman. No?
I just don't get it.
Okay, that's fine. That's a discussion for another day. So let's talk about Magnum and Tully.
Why would you pay $50, or how much is a pay-per-view?
I mean, yeah, they were like $40 to $50, but now they're $10 a month if you subscribe to the network.
Okay. But why would you pay $50 for one event when if they just aired it on TNT and they paid commercial people?
Because when done right, they drew big buy rate numbers because they were promoting big time matches that you wouldn't see on TV. It's gotten more watered down and they've kind of lost focus on that stuff. But
all right, we'll have to have an economics episode.
All right, I got the guys that can come on.
Research.
I got some guys that can come on and break it down. One guy actually has a podcast called WrestleNomics. So.
All right, so let's get into Magnum.
Yeah.
This guy, like, what's his story? He's a babyface.
Babyface up-and-comer. Obviously has the Magnum PI look, right? The mustache.
That's what I was just going to ask. Is Magnum TA based on Magnum PI? Was, like, the show so popular that there's, like...
I think so.
This is going to be your name. Everyone loves Tom Selleck and the mustache. He's tall. He's good-looking.
Yeah, let me confirm when Magnum P.I. started. Yeah, 1980. So, I mean, it was Magnum P.I. So, his name is Terry Allen. That's his name. Terry Allen.
So, the T.A. isn't like some double entendre with the T.N.A.?
No. It's just T.A. is his initials. So, it's Magnum T.A. It's like Mr. T. We talked about last time, Mr. Tenard or whatever his name was.
I always thought Mr. T. was like some kind of sexual reference.
So, Magnum T.A. had the look that was making the ladies wet in the 80s. The mustache, the jacked up muscles, the hairy chest, man's man, the curly mullet. Just everything you wanted in a guy, a macho guy in the 80s. This guy's not drinking a beer while his parents are fixing up his house. This guy's in there doing the fucking woodwork.
That was a low blow.
It was a low blow. So Magnum, quintessential all-American, apple pie, white meat, good guy. And Tully Blanchard is everything that's against that. He's a slimy, smarmy, dick, playboy.
Why doesn't this guy have a nickname? Because he has so much chest hair.
Magnum?
No, Tully.
Oh, Tully?
He could have like so many different animal-themed nicknames.
But I think
based on his chest hair
alone. I feel like everyone had chest hair in the 80s, so it wasn't like unique at that time.
I think his was above average.
You think so?
I feel like he was trimming it, and it was still coming through.
Yeah.
Like Al Michaels.
Jerry
you know,
Seinfeld.
Like, he definitely shaved that morning, but he did Monday Night Football, and right. He had, like, you could see where his beard was.
It's already
was.
Coming back.
The same thing with Tully.
So Tully really was due for, like, some comeuppance, just a real douche. Magnum was the guy to give it to him. So talk about the match just for a minute, like your thoughts. And if you want to get into the blood, we can. And I want to talk to about – well, I guess we got one more Magnum match coming up because I want to talk about where he ends up long term. So –
are you going to tell me that Magnum's a racist and a
homophobe? No.
All this nonsense?
No. So let's talk about the blood. What did you think of the blood?
Well, I thought the blood was cool because even though it's still in essence a chain link fence, there are more aerial catapults into the cage. Mm-hmm. And if they were actually cutting themselves, I couldn't really notice. I just figured they just busted their head on the cage.
Right.
And once they started bleeding, I thought it was odd because what if they really can't see? Like, what if the blood just fills their eyes and they can't continue? But it felt, I thought they were blinded and they were still wrestling.
Yeah.
It was pretty impressive, actually.
I guess you just get used to it. Knowing how to deal with it, wiping it out of your eyes.
Well, that's what I keep asking you. Like, how choreographed is it? Because you're telling me that they're talking to each other about what move they're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
These matches can be anywhere, like upwards of a half an hour. How, I mean, people who act in movies, they memorize stuff for up to 2 hours. So is every single move and turn and throw
so
already
more,
planned?
More these days. In those days, you had a lot more veterans. And you've commented before on how these guys look old. Because some of them were older, like they're in their 30s. So they've been around. They'd worked all around the country, had a lot of practice. And they've learned the art of calling a match based on in the ring, on the fly, based on their inherent knowledge of how to work a crowd. So if the crowd's super hot, they may go to a chin lock and bring them down a little bit. And just when they're losing the crowd, the guy may make a little bit of a comeback and get the crowd back. So like they would call it that way. And in the heel usually control the match because the heel works majority of the offense throughout the match because the babyface sells. So he's usually the guy calling the moves in the ring and he'll piece it together as they go. So they may have an outline going into the match. Like, we're going to start with this. This is what we want to do in the middle to kind of turn the tide. Here's the finish. And then they put together the rest of the match on the fly in the ring. I mean, they may talk stuff through, but it's not outlined move by move.
That's really impressive because there are for example, when they're in the corner, okay, so you got the guy backed up in the corner and the guy's about to kick him in the face, and then he turns, the guy hits his foot against the thing, and then he punches him. And the guy who just air kicked is totally selling it the whole time. So like, don't they expect to either connect or miss?
Yeah, so they'll call it ahead. So they may say whip, reverse, missed kick, punch in the face, slam. Like, I have you in a chin lock, and it'll whisper that sequence in the guy's ear, and then they'll execute it.
Wow. How can they keep track of all that stuff when they're bleeding?
They're making it up as they go. They're professionals. I mean, a lot of times the referee may help give cues. If it's a manager, they may, you know, help push things along. But no, a lot of these guys are just veterans that have been around. I mean, Tully Blanchard had been around for a long time. Magnum was pretty new.
Well, Magnum, look, I couldn't help watch this match and not just think about the guy's cock.
Yeah.
It was just like his name, his hairdo, his like crazy stare. He stands with his feet wide apart. And every time either Tully or Magnum got the other one down, they grabbed the microphone. And they're like, say it. The guy's head was in between his crotch,
yeah. And
the microphone was could literally have substituted for the guy's cock.
Yeah.
I mean, that must have been on purpose, right? He was like, say it! They're like shoving it into the other guy's mouth, like, say it! And they're like, no! I don't want to suck your cock!
Yeah. That's a unique perspective. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely
what
possible.
What do you mean unique perspective? When was the last time you watched this match? I'm telling you.
I know. No, it's a lot of fallacy.
At least four times of one guy sitting on top of the other guy's head with the microphone coming out of his crotch going, say it, yeah. And like gyrating the microphone up and down.
It's certainly possible that they planned it. Or the blood was in their eyes and they couldn't see where they were holding the microphone.
Whatever. Magnum is an expert of cockery.
He probably was. He probably slayed a lot of vag in the 80s. That's my guess. What did you think of did the blood enhance the match for you? Or could you take it or leave it? Or did it make you feel like this is a more barbaric fight, a more hated fight because these guys are bleeding?
Yeah, the blood definitely helped. Because, you know, I can get behind a story. And I can appreciate a good move here or there, but once they start bleeding, then I'm like, oh, you know, I'm an American, I'm a bad person.
Right. So what in like gore you out? Like you weren't like, ugh.
No, I was like, oh my god, one of them might die.
Right.
And it was exciting.
Okay. Because NWA is known more for their blood. I mean, they have, like, there's been cards where, like, every match someone bleeds, you know? So, like, they're much more blood-heavy than, like, WWF ever was.
Yeah, it was, I enjoyed the blood.
Okay. So what did you think of the finish? Well, you already speared your finish, but was it a feel-good moment when Magnum jammed that thing in his head and forced him to say, I quit, to win his title?
No, it was kind of a downer, actually. But I already talked about it.
Like, yeah. All right.
If when they said, there are no falls, somebody has to say, I quit, I was kind of, I'm like, all right, what are they going to find out? Like, maybe one of them kidnaps the other one's child and they're like, say it or I'll, you know, bust up the kid. But he's just hitting him in the head with a board and he goes, I quit? No.
He was jamming the jagged edge into the cut.
Whatever. That obviously doesn't hurt that much. Give me $100. I'll let you jam a jagged board in my head right now.
Well, you'd have to get sliced open, open the cut, and then jam it in.
Fine.
All right. Well, you're unique. I don't know. Tully Blanchard could only wish to be you. All right. Let's get to our next match, which is the same show. Dusty Rhodes versus Ric Flair for the NWA World Heavyweight title. Ric Flair is your champion. Dusty coming in as the challenger. They had actually fought the year before in 1984. And in that show, Dusty and Flair were both faces. And it was kind of like a friendly tete-a-tete. But in 1985...
Flair was a face?
Flair was a... Yeah.
I can't imagine him as a face.
Yeah, he was a beloved face. And then on 9/29, Ric Flair was defending his title against Nikita Koloff in a cage. Nikita, who you saw earlier in another match we're going to talk about, him and his Uncle Ivan assaulted Flair until Dusty Rhodes made the save for his buddy, Ric Flair. Rhodes was checking on Flair. The Andersons, your boys, Ole and Arn, came in and jumped Dusty, and Flair joined in. It was all a setup, all a ruse to bait Dusty in the ring, and they beat the shit out of him. And that would eventually become the group known as the Four Horsemen that would form in early 1986. Tully Blanchard would join them, too, in 1986. So it'd be Tully, Flair, and the Andersons, managed by J.J. Dillon, as the Four Horsemen.
The Four Horsemen.
Yeah. Had you ever heard of the Four Horsemen?
Of Revelation?
Well, of wrestling.
No.
Okay. Interesting. I thought there were more of the maybe groups you may have
I would
of.
Have thought that if there was a group called the Four Horsemen, they would have been good guys.
Yeah, no, these guys were not. They rode together, partied together. Like, they were living the life that you imagine Ric Flair to live. Just, like, partying every night, banging a bunch of rats. Flying on Learjets. So Dusty's ankle was broken in that fight in the cage when they beat him up. And then he said the timetable, his doctor was interviewed, said the timetable is up in the air, and Dusty recovered in time. But of course, that was obviously the focal point of the match, was Flair working over Dusty's
ankle. He's still got a bad ankle.
Right. They talk about it a lot. So what'd you think of this match? I mean, did this feel like a main event to a big show for you?
I gotta say, I watched two Ric Flair matches, and they were both... I think I need to watch more Ric Flair matches.
Okay.
Because last time I insulted somebody, and then you made me feel bad about it. And you're like, no, he's really regarded as a really good wrestler.
I'll tell you, Ric Flair is considered by many to be the greatest wrestler in history. Of all time.
Exactly, which right. is why I don't want to go too far yet. Yeah. But all right, so let's just stick with the Dusty Rhodes fight. It was like an hour long.
It was, I can tell you right now, 12 minutes.
12 minutes?
Yeah.
No way. Did I watch the wrong one?
No. You watched the one where Dusty wins in the end?
Yeah, he pins him over the back.
Yeah.
12 minutes? All right, it felt like an hour.
Yeah.
There was nothing to it. They just kept doing the same things over and over again.
It is a bit of a frustrated match. So like,
I'm like, here comes Dusty Rhodes. Who's this guy? He's just a big fat guy.
But he dominates a lot of the match, right? You would have thought the match should have been Flair just beating the shit out of the ankle and Dusty kind of steals the win, right? It's kind of the opposite where Dusty controls a lot.
He's taking it to him.
Yeah, and then it just kind of ends. Did you buy the figure four as a lethal finisher? Or because Dusty stayed in it too long, did you think it was kind of marginalized?
Yeah, it didn't... I don't know. It didn't really have the weight of, say, the camel clutch.
Right.
I was like, it's never going to get out of this one.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the figure four was always meant to be like a game. That was it, like the end.
Once you get it, it's over.
Yeah. So to me, that always kind of bothered me with this match, that Dusty's ankle was so banged up and then he hangs in the figure four. To me, it like kind of, like we talked about last episode, how Macho Man, you know, Hogan kicks out of the elbow, like one, kind of marginalizes it a bit. I mean, the figure four is fine. Flair would use it for many years after and it would be effective, but there's little things here or there. I thought it was weird that Dusty dominates this whole match when the story set up that Flair was going to, you know, really beat the shit out of his ankle for a while and take advantage of that.
There was no secondary backstory, like Ric Flair had the flu or something?
No. No, but there was...
So Flair was the champion.
Flair was champion.
And then Rhodes wins it.
Yeah.
So Flair had been champion for 2 years. Because, you know, Andre the Giant had this thing where he never lost.
Right.
Or Hogan had the title for the most amount of years. In the NWA, what is the thing where, you know, one guy never lost or lost the fewest amount of times? Or is it just the title just being thrown back and forth?
No. They would, like, Flair had had it for 2 years here. So they would definitely have guys that reigned for a long time. Like, they looked at their world title as very prestigious. And the idea of a world champion would come out of a territory but was expected to tour the country and work against all different guys. And that's why Flair is considered so highly, is he wasn't just Hulk Hogan working against, you know, whatever, King Kong Bundy 100 times. He would go to St. Louis and fight their best guy. The next day, go to Chicago, fight their best guy. Like, he was expected to tour the world as champion and represent the NWA as their world champion. And the NWA had a board that would decide who would become the next champion. So you had to, like, pass their test or whatever to say this guy's a worthy champion.
Is it possible that they just picked him because of his hair?
I think it's the whole package. The look. I mean, he was pretty hot in the early 80s. He was over, and Playboy 80s image.
All right, so these people who say Ric Flair may be the greatest wrestler ever.
Yeah.
Give me three reasons why. Three reasons why Ric Flair might be the... Because I'll tell you one reason that he's not the greatest wrestler ever, and that is his in-ring talking persona.
Okay.
Because all he does is yell, "Shut up! Shut fat up, boy? Everyone, shut up!"
You didn't hear me?
You didn't get any fat boys
in another one? So, would you be interested to listen to a podcast?
It's like Hulk Hogan would be like De Niro, and Ric Flair would be like Matt Damon.
I think I said Pacino. Because, oh, my.
Pacino's pretty good.
Yeah, he's all right. Would you be interested in listening to a podcast explaining to you why Ric Flair is the greatest of all time?
I absolutely would.
So, there was a project a couple years ago on a message board that's a big partner, PTBN, called Pro Wrestling Only, and they did a Greatest Wrestler Ever project. And our buddy Parv, who's a diehard Ric Flair enthusiast, did a 5-podcast series with different guests talking about why Ric Flair is... They talked about his matches. They talked about his character, his promos.
I need to meet Parv.
He's in England, so it may be tough. But
no.
We can maybe get him to meet Mazenga, who then can relay to you.
All right, Parv, call Mazenga. Tell Mazenga to call me. We'll hook it up.
So I want you to listen. I'll send you the podcast, and you're going to listen to it. And then next time we talk NWA, you can tell me what you thought about Parr's defense of why Ric Flair is the greatest of all time. All
right. We will sharks and jets these two podcasts together.
It's called Fair to Flair is the podcast series.
Fair to Flair. Okay. So, I dig it.
All right. So you know how there's some shenanigans at the end of this match? The Andersons come in.
Oh, man. I was actually watching this with my fiance. Yeah. And she's like, "What's happening here? Nothing's happening." And I'm like, "Something's going to happen. Justin made me watch this fight. Something's going to happen." And she's like, "Nothing's happening. Nothing's happening." And then all of a sudden, everything happens.
Right.
All these guys. I'm like, "See, I told you."
So the referee was down. The Andersons come in. And things go awry.
The Andersons.
The Andersons
come in. Oh, man, I hate that name.
The Andersons come in.
Your name's Anderson. My name's Anderson. Let's be the Andersons.
So the Andersons come in. And the referee misses all that, wakes up, and counts the pin for Dusty, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this was the first of what would eventually cause major issues for Jim Crockett Promotions, in that they dicked the fans over with things like this, because right after this event on TV, the referee, Tommy Young, came out and said, I was dizzy, I wasn't completely with it, but I saw the Andersons interfere, and it should have been a disqualification. So I'm changing the finish of the match to a disqualification and giving the title back to Ric Flair.
Oh, my God.
And that's what they did. And it was... In one hand, you can say, okay, they want to lather the fans up even more. Now they're even more mad at Flair. But eventually, you're going to breed apathy when every time you get this big win, you don't know if they're going to rip it out from under you. Right. And it feels like, why did I invest my time in that feud, in that match?
They can just make anyone, yeah.
All right, so why did they let me go to bed that night thinking my hero was champion, and then the next night they just fuck you with you? And it would effectually be called the Dusty Finish, because he was known. He was known for using that finish quite a bit, where they would have a guy win and then do something screwy and get the belt off him, or, you know, whatever. They'd reverse the finish either that night or whatever, the next night or something like that. So the dusty finish, Olivia face. But that's, I mean, that's what he, so that's what happened after this match. Does that cheapen it for you when you heard about that?
Yeah.
Do you feel like you wasted your time now?
Yeah, I mean, you only watch a match for the finish.
Right.
You can't, like, what is this, like NFL, MLB now? You gonna, this is like the offsides review in NHL?
And there's no...
You're going to retroactively ruin a good play?
And there's no... I mean, there's no instant replay in wrestling. So the whole thing's kind of hokey. But I guess his thing is, Tommy Young, the referee, was saying, not that he went back and saw it, is that he saw it at the time, but was too woozy to piece it together.
Too woozy. Who gives a shit about the referee?
Well, we've talked a lot about referees in this show, Jeff. Now you should know the role they play. All right, so we jump ahead just a few days later. Ric Flair... back to being champion, takes on Ronnie Garvin on TV. This match went not as long, probably about a little under 20 minutes. Any thoughts on Flair versus Garvin? Or you can just talk about Garvin if you want.
I never heard of this Garvin guy before this match. I felt like the crowd liked him. And the reason I knew that is because there were 13 people in the crowd.
Yes.
And they were all about 10 years old. And... all the crowd kept saying was, "Go Garvin, you suck, Flair. Go Garvin." Like, what? How is this a championship fight?
Well, because their TV was in a studio. Yeah, it was in a TV studio.
I thought you just told me over the past two podcasts that the entire point of pro wrestling was to get people to come to these big arenas and pay big tickets to watch them live. And now they're in this little arena with a bunch of kids wearing Little League uniforms.
Yeah. Well, that's the TV to get people live. So this was the TV.
But there's no buzz. You still need a crowd. It was terrible.
Yeah. I mean, this is just what it was at that time. I mean, this is just the era. And WWF, that's why they broke out and built such a following of kids and whatever, because of the production. It looked slick. It looked exciting. It looked, you know, different. It wasn't.
The audio is weird. You can hear everything they're saying. They're like, you know.
Do you think you would have liked it better if I showed you this first? Is it weird going... okay, you still would have thought it was weird?
Yes.
Okay. I'm just curious if it was weird going from WWF to this made it, like, even seem...
The only way I would have enjoyed this match is if I had watched it when I was 5 years old and I had never seen any other wrestling match before.
Or if you were 40 and lived in North Carolina in 1985.
Yes.
And speaking of, so Garvin was 40 in this match, so he was older.
Really? Because he looked so much younger than Flair.
No, he was 40 in this match.
I kind of liked him.
Yeah, a lot of people like him. He's a guy that, you know, you have to kind of dig in a little bit to see his good stuff. Let me ask you, was there one move in particular you really liked from Garvin that he looked like he did really well?
Honestly, I can't remember a lot about that match because I...
Well, you watched two Garvin matches. Was there one thing that stood out that he did really well to you?
You're asking me that as if there's like this famous thing that you thought that I would have liked that Garvin does. And... I can't.
Did you like the way he punched? Because he's known for having really good, crisp, like realistic looking punches.
Well, I didn't notice his fist punching, but his headbutts were pretty good.
His headbutts are good too, yeah.
Yeah.
You have to watch like 2 minutes of a match to see. Because him and Jerry Lawler and a few other guys are really well renowned for their punching.
So when you punch, are you... like, are you actually hitting the other guy? Or are you stopping?
You want to snugly... you want to snug... like right up against, and you make it look, you know, so you're snapping a little bit with it. So they're connecting, but, you know, he's pulling it just enough to where, like, you know, but he was just really good at making them look like they're connecting. All
right, so what if you suck at it, but you actually punch the guy?
So that's called a potato.
Does the other guy get pissed and go, "What the fuck, man?"
Well, he might give you a receipt back, is what that's called. So if you hit me, maybe 3 minutes later, he might kind of tag you with one. And it's kind of understood that you're going to, if you get potatoed, you're probably going to get whacked back. So, or well, if you potato someone.
I'm sort of proud of myself because for the second Garvin fight, I didn't specifically single out his punching.
Let's tie them both together. Tie them both together. So let me just call out that match because it's next anyway. Ronnie Garvin versus Tully Blanchard from May 3rd, 1986 on TV. And this match, this was like 35 minutes. This was a lot longer of a match.
They would go to commercial Be like, if anything else happens, we'll tell you when we come back. They come back from commercial and they're still fighting. I didn't get that at all.
Well, they're trying to keep people interested through the break.
But what if they get pinned during the break?
It's a risk you take. Like Dodi F and others have actually done that to make it seem realistic. They had the match finished during the commercial and then showed they'd show the finish when they came back to make it seem real. Did you like that match? Like, how would you compare the two Garvin performances?
Well, Garvin specifically, I thought it was kind of, you know, kind of equal. But the reason I like this match a lot more is because Dusty Rhodes was calling it.
Yeah. What'd you think of Dusty in commentary then?
He was amazing. And, okay, so he was like the babyface commentator.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, come on, Ronnie, roll him, Ronnie. Yeah. Every time Ron did something, it was great. And then I was just like missing Jesse the Body so much because he's such a great heel commentator.
Yeah.
And I just had this amazing idea. What if those two guys commentated together?
Right.
That would be the best pairing of all time.
And Dusty gets even better as he gets a little more tapped in the head and a little more wacky going forward.
Well, see, I had to watch this on YouTube because right. I guess it's not on the network, so I couldn't even hear everything.
Yeah.
So a lot of everything that was being said was just mumbles, but it still made me feel so good. It was just like this really cool sound, oh, and then you just say, baby, or that's how you do that, Jack.
I've been riding with Ronnie up and down the roads talking about his hand.
Ride him, Ronnie, ride him.
So we talked a lot about limb work earlier. Did you like the focus on Garvin's hand? The way that whenever Tully would get in trouble, they'd find a way to go back to the hand. They rip the tape off the hand, you know, and then Dusty tapes the hand back up to help protect him. And like, what did you think of did you enjoy your first, this is really your first foray into a match with a guy that has like a real damaged piece of his body that just gets like vultured by his opponent?
Yes. Yeah, so his right hand was broken, but then he kept slapping Tully with his right hand. I'm like, dude, just use your left hand.
Yeah. Well, his right hand's his lethal weapon. That's why it's so bad that it's hurt.
Yeah, but you're a professional. That's like, you know, my dad, fundamentals, eighth grade basketball. You got to practice with your left hand. Just slap him with your left hand.
Yeah.
You got
to
have
ambidextrous. Did you like the way he'd sell it, though, when he hit him with it? Like, it took everything out of him to hit him, you know, because then his hand was aching.
Yeah, it was kind of like Rocky-esque.
Yeah. He's gutting through it. You don't think that makes him look more badass, that he's gutting through and using it?
No, because Tully was the same thing. His leg was injured.
Yeah.
And he would, like, kick him and then go, ah, my leg.
I like that one spot where, like, they rip the tape off and Tully just steps on his fucking hand. Like, this is such a dick move, right?
Yeah, I was thinking because, you know, you always ask me these questions, who's the best wrestler, what's the best move and stuff. And I was like, well, the best wrestler of this match was Garvin because he kept stepping on Tully's leg over and over again. I was like, that is genius.
Yeah.
That is just genius fighting. Just stomp on the guy's injured leg.
So did you like
2 minutes in a row?
So did you like the psychology of this match? We talked about like psychology in the past, where there was a lot of focus, like you said. Like did it make more sense to you than a lot of other matches where these guys both have an injured part? And like you said, Garvin is going after the leg. He's constantly stomping the leg to break Tully down. And Tully's constantly going to the hand to cut him off. And like it builds naturally to where they keep targeting these injured parts until one finally gives out.
Well, I can't say that I really appreciated that aspect of it. I just kind of thought they were being dicks.
Yeah.
Like, okay, we each have an injury and let's attack it. That's, you know, basic boxing or football type thing, I guess. I don't know. I just kind of kept watching the match going, all right, well, I feel like Garvin's going to win because he's the good guy. And I was just trying to listen to everything that Dusty said because it was all hilarious. All
right, so
and also, I was obsessed with the fact that there was this guy named JJ.
JJ Dillon, yeah.
Who's this old guy with a suit.
Yeah.
And Garvin didn't have a manager. And who is this guy? He's like a lawyer? Is he like an uncle?
No, he's like the agent and the handler of the Four Horsemen. He makes all the plans and, you know.
Oh, of all the Four Horsemen.
The whole, yeah. He
not
was always
just Tully.
Well, he was with Tully before, and then he ends up going with all of the Horsemen. And he's the manager of the Horsemen.
And his best move is to hand a guy a fistful of quarters.
Right, or a shoe, or whatever he can find.
Oh my God, the shoe! Yeah. I forgot about the shoe. He's like, it's like 10, 15 minutes of these guys trying to break each other's wrists and knees and like elbowing each other in the face. And all of a sudden, oh my God, he hit him with a shoe. He hit him with a shoe. It's like the most, the cruelest thing that's ever happened. I'm like, dude, who cares? It's a shoe.
It's foreign objects.
It's like Austin Powers. Who throws a shoe?
So what did you think though of this another dusty finish? Did you watch through after when they turn the decision over? Or did you stop?
Wait a minute.
So Garvin wins because he socks him with their handful of quarters.
Oh, but then because he taped him. And he's like, no tape! Right. No tape, no tape, no tape.
But then the referee sees all the coins. Well, Tully had the coins.
Tully had the coins.
But Garvin hits him with a taped hand.
Yeah.
But then the referee, after he counts three and gives Garvin the win, sees all the coins on the floor and assumes Ronnie hit him with the coins, and he turns the decision and gives it to Tully.
Oh, I don't think that. I think he, someone told him that Rhodes taped his hand.
Okay.
And he goes over to him and he says, and he looks at his hand and he goes, no tape, no tape, no tape. And he takes the belt away, like a little kid. And then somebody else is going, what about the quarters? What about the quarters? The quarters. He got the quarters too. And he's like, no, he's the champ. Doesn't matter. Can't use tape.
So another dusty finish, right? Yeah, the champion won. Oh, the challenger won the title, and then they find a way to take it off him.
And they rip it away.
Yeah. So they give you that moment of elation and then shit on your throat with that.
And there's yet another dusty finish coming up, which is even worse than this one.
A big part of what...
Because you know what? As much as I want... I thought Tully was a loser and he sucked in this match, and Garvin deserved to win. The whole tape thing? Hey, if you can't use tape, and the referee is looking the other way, and you pin the guy... Just rip it off. These guys have razor blades to cut their own faces open. They can't get a piece of tape off their hand. Come on, man. That's his own fault. All right. Got no sympathy.
So the last match we watched, our buddy with the big cock is back, Magnum. And he's taking on one of my favorite types of characters in this time of wrestling is the big Russian, Nikita Koloff, with his uncle Ivan.
Oh, my God. His uncle? I thought Ivan's they were twin uncle. Brothers.
No, Ivan's his uncle.
That's insane.
So Ivan was like a WWF champion way back in the day. So he's like a kind of a legendary guy.
Wait, so there's an Ivan Koloff and a Nikolai Volkov.
Yes. And Nikita Koloff.
What are the odds?
I know. Amazing, right? So.
I also noticed that his singlet said CCCP. Do you know what that stands for?
Russia.
No, you don't, because Russian words are not in the normal alphabet. Right. I looked it up.
I love 80s Russia.
It's like 80s my favorite Russia stuff. Is so good.
Right? It's awesome. I'd love to live in 80s Russia. Americans. Best show on TV. So this feud was the culmination. They had a best of seven series for the United States Championship, these two guys. Nikita coming in as champ.
This is the Ultimate Warrior belt.
Yes.
Which is what I'm going to call it from now on.
Okay. United States title. Yep. 86, a big year for Crockett. But these dusty finishes are piling up a bit.
When you say Crockett, do you mean...
Jim Crockett Promotions, North Carolina territory.
So not the guy.
His territory.
Okay.
It'd be like if I was calling Dirty F. McMahon. Think of it like that.
That's why you're confusing me.
I know. That's just what it's called. I'm trying. I'm trying. Carolina.
I'm a beginner. I don't
know. I know. I'm trying. I'm working hard. This is just as hard for me as it is for you.
Is it?
Yes. Because it's like trying to teach a kid something. We just want to say, this is what it is. You know?
It's like trying to teach my mom football.
Right. It's like, this is what they do.
I told you what the line of scrimmage was 20 years ago.
All right. So what did you think of this match? Two out of three falls.
Two out of three falls. I mean, that's crazy. Why aren't we doing this all the time?
Well, for a long time back in the day, all championship matches were two out of three falls. And then they backed that off.
I mean, you pin a guy and they get 30 seconds. Do you know any other sport that does that? Like if you're boxing... You knock a guy out, he gets a 10 count, then he gets 30 seconds to try to fight you again?
Yeah.
That doesn't make any sense.
That's not always part of the stip for false count anywhere. I mean, best out of three falls. Sometimes they give him like a commercial break. And sometimes they go right into the next fall. So, did you think... My issue with two out of three falls matches, and then we'll get to this later too with some kind of like elimination matches and stuff. It feels almost like the finish comes faster than it would have in a regular match. Like, I feel like... Magnum hits the belly-to-belly real fast and pins Nikita faster than he would have in a regular
match. Yeah, I was going to ask you, if you got a two out of three match, it's always going to go three, right? The same guy isn't just going to win two in a row.
Right. There's been a few where a guy has won one in two falls, and that's been it. But normally they build where the heel, well, I guess in this one, the face won the first fall. A lot of times the heel may win the first one to put the pressure on the face to win two in a row. But yeah, generally it goes three falls.
I thought that was weird.
Did you like the match? Did you like Nikita?
Well, here's the thing. I watched it and I immediately forgot about the two out of three rule.
Right.
And I was like, yeah, Magnum! And then I was like, oh, right, right.
They got still going.
Yeah,
still going.
Start again. Nikita was okay, but it's okay. Is me being the beginner guy.
Yeah.
I got to scale it back.
Yeah.
I'm going to try to ask a diplomatic question. Is this guy viewed as a good wrestler?
Nikita?
Yeah.
So I'm not going to say he's like considered someone with great work rates, but he was a pretty good power wrestler that understood how to wrestle a match.
Okay.
So, above average?
Well, all right. Good. So my impression from this match was that he basically just threw Magnum into the ropes and then kneed him a bunch of times or just like grabbed his head and threw him down. It didn't seem very complex. It wasn't very skillful. It wasn't like on a Garvin-type level.
Right. No, a lot of these, sometimes these guys were just big, powerful monsters that just clobbered people. I mean, that's... You know, he may not have known how to time in and how to work the crowd and have some charisma. But yes, in the ring, he's not a wizard. I mean, he's a lot of just pulverizing people.
Yeah, I mean, he was good. He was a good
1980s Russian.
He did what he had to do. He's very Drago-like.
Would you want to see more character of the Russians?
Sure.
Okay.
I'm actually more now so that I knew that the other guy was his uncle. Yeah. I thought they were twin brothers.
Uncle Ivan. So
also, what's 137 kilos? So you got Magnum, who's 232. You got this other guy, who's 137 kilos. What the fuck is a kilo?
That's what they measure weight in Russia.
No, I know the metric system. I just don't know how heavy it is. He looks bigger. Right. How many pounds is it?
Was it 132 kilos?
137 kilos.
137?
Like, that doesn't sound exciting. You just announced the other guy was 232.
It's 302 pounds.
137 kilos? That doesn't make any sense.
That's the conversion.
How many?
302.
Oh, 302. Yeah, that's heavy. Okay, yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah. It was meant to be more like this guy's from Russia. He's not adapting to you and your fucking U.S. way of doing measurements and weights.
Yeah, but I'm watching it in the U.S. I want the guy to be...
He doesn't care. He's not adapting to you. He's from Russia, from the motherland.
And his opponent, Hulk Hogan, who is 27 bushels big.
Well, wait till we get to Steve Regal from England. He's 16 stone.
The frick is a stone?
Let's see right here. Look, 16 stone. Stone to pounds conversion.
Isn't that an album?
16 stones is 224 pounds. Ask Mazenga how much stones he weighs.
So how many stones am I? Like 14? 15 and a half?
14 stones would be 196 pounds.
I'm 14 stones.
Attaboy.
Sweet.
All right. Are you ready to, with every little bit of happiness comes a grain of salt. Are you ready to have that salt brought out, the Jim Price Memorial grain of salt thrown at you?
Okay.
So shortly after this.
Oh my God, wait, no. Don't tell me that somebody I really liked and just fell in love with died.
He's not dead.
Or is a homophobe or is a
no,
racist.
No. I mean, it's bad, but not that.
Or is like in the ISIS.
No. So October 14th, Magnum TA driving home on a rainy day.
Killed somebody driving?
Lost control of his car, wrapped it around a pole, was not speeding, but he was trapped in the car for 2 hours before someone showed up and called 911, ended up being paralyzed, crushed two vertebrae, and never wrestled again. He would eventually...
After this match?
When was his date on this?
86?
986? A month later.
Oh my God. I was just going to ask you, what was the time warp from this match to the Tully Blanchard cage match?
That was a year before. Tully was a year before this one.
I was going to say, because yeah. Magnum looked like 10 years older.
Right.
He had like a muffin top going.
Well, he'd been working the road.
His blonde streaks were kind of grayish.
Yeah. He aged quickly. So it was.
All of a sudden he gets in a car crash?
It was devastating because they had him pegged to be like the net. He, at the Starrcade that year, he was scheduled to win the world title from Flair and become like the big, like their Hulk Hogan. And it totally crippled like all their plans. Like they pegged him to be like their big superstar. And then this happened.
That's not a grain of salt.
That's
like a giant dump truck of shit.
Yeah. I was just trying to work in the RSV reference. So he would walk again with a cane, but he would never wrestle again. And what the fallout from this would be is they'd turn Nikita face because his heated rival went down and he, like, whatever, wanted to
then.
They'd
turn a guy with a CCCP singlet.
They turned
him. Nobody can even translate that.
And it got over. He was doing it for Magnum, his archenemy that he wanted to then go ahead and, you know. So he got the match with Ric Flair at Starrcade instead. But they turned him because they had to fill the void. They were looking for someone to step in.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Is there any wrestler who's not going to disappoint me? Who's just going to live out his life into his 60s, into the 2000-aughts?
Have you heard a guy The Rock?
The Rock.
He's doing pretty well. Ricky Steamboat.
Are you going to make me watch Rock matches?
Eventually.
I already know who Rock is.
But he's awesome.
He's
like
a tool of an actor. I don't want to watch him wrestle.
You should watch him wrestle. He's really good. Ricky Steamboat is awesome. We're going to see him, and he's still doing okay.
It's 10:10. We're 5 minutes over.
We're doing okay. Well, we're done. We talked about all our matches. So anything you want to talk about before we wrap up the world of NWA for tonight?
Well, like I said, I feel like you opened up a Pandora's box of just mixed emotions for me because, you know, you started me off with Hulk Hogan, Randy Savage, all these like colorful characters and uniforms and theme music and stuff. And then you're like, hey, watch Ric Flair wrestle in a basement.
It's a roller coaster. We're going to bring you up and back down and then back up again.
And I'm like, all right, Magnum TA is cool, but I guess he just got in a car crash. I'll never see him wrestle again.
Yeah.
Nope, and now NWA is not just a rap group. It's not even going to be a wrestling thing anymore because they're going to change the name to WCW.
Right.
So, you know what, dude? I don't even know. I don't even know what to think anymore.
Everything you're saying is accurate. Do you want to rank these matches, or do you just want to do that off air and announce next time where we're at? Do you have star ratings on these?
I didn't actually do the star ratings yet.
Okay.
I will say that probably my favorite...
Garvin. Or because Magnum Tully is generally considered like a five-star match. Did you feel like that was like a 4.5, five-star match? Like a great match? Would you put that as the best match you've watched so far, Magnum Tully? Because by general consensus of what we've watched, that would be the best match. You don't have to feel that way, but...
I definitely don't feel that way.
Okay. Did you think it was better than Mega Powers Twin Towers?
Yeah, it's 4, 4.5.
Okay.
It's not a 5.
Well, so you have Mega Powers Mega Bucks as 4 stars. That's the best match you've said you've watched so far. Would you put it above that?
You know what? I don't need these leading questions.
All right, I'm just asking you. I wasn't even going to ask you. Where would you put it?
Let's reevaluate the rankings later because...
All right.
If this is supposed to...
All right, rank...
I don't need you to tell me that it's a 5-star match, okay?
I want to know if you think it is.
I will tell you and all your cronies why it's not a 5-star match. How about that?
All right.
So what we'll do next time is we'll go through this next arc of WrestleMania matches, and then I will give you a 5 to 10 minute soliloquy on why people are overrating the cage match between Magnum and Tully.
I'm looking forward to it. Can you rank the matches you watched for tonight's show? You don't have to give star ratings. Just 1 through 5 or whatever, however many there were.
See, here's the thing. You and I are ranking things based on different things.
No, I want your ranking. Don't worry about me ranking. Don't worry about me.
My favorite.
I want your ranking.
Enjoyable.
I know my ranking.
My most enjoyable.
Get out of my business.
Viewing experience was the Garvin Blanchard match, which was mostly because of Dusty.
Yeah.
Because he said
that's part of it. That counts.
Then the Magnum Koloff match. Because, you know, it was 2 out of 3. I'm a big rocks, paper, scissors fan. You know that.
Yes, I do.
Then the quote
unquote. I'm going to use that as a tagline for this episode, by the way.
The quote unquote best match ever, Magnum and Tully. You know, it was good, but 5 stars. We'll get into that later. And then the fourth best match would be the Garvin Tully?
No, Garvin Flair.
Garvin
Tully is your favorite.
Okay. Right.
You
no, Garvin Tully is my last favorite. Garvin Flair is my last favorite. So it'll be Dusty. They're all the same guys. You maybe watch the same guys. All right.
So number one is Garvin Tully.
We got one, Garvin Tully.
Magnum Koloff.
Magnum Koloff.
Magnum Tully.
Magnum Tully.
Flair Garvin,
number okay. five.
All right, good stuff. All right, I'm going to ask you the question I ask you at the end of every episode, Jeff. Do you want to continue on this journey?
I do, but you know what? I don't. It's been a very troubling week. This whole NWA stuff, I either need to see a lot more of it or just erase it from my memory.
Okay. Temporarily, we're going to erase it because good news for you is next episode, we're going back to the WWF into 1986. We're going to look at some WrestleMania 2 and some other stuff that happened around WrestleMania 2. There's some fun stuff in here, so I'm looking forward to your thoughts. I think there's some. This is one of the best angles in WWF history we're going to talk about as well. So I'm curious your thoughts on that.
What's an angle?
Storyline. That's like one of the best stories.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So I'm hoping you'll like that. We'll see if you'll pick up on it.
Very literary term.
So we're looking back to be back next week. We're hoping. We tentatively have it scheduled. be sure to take part in, if you haven't heard about it yet, you probably have, the Greatest WWE Wrestler of All Time project. You can look it up on PlayStation.com. We have a Facebook group. Also talking about it on Twitter. Listen to our other shows for more details there. Shop with us, PlayStation.com/Amazon. Follow us on social media. Subscribe to our feeds on iTunes. Pro Wrestling Only, PlayStation Wrestling, and PlayStation Pop. Jeff, I'm going to make sure I send you the Fair to Flair series as well, so you have to check those out at your soonest convenience. Anything else you want to say before we wrap up?
Sure thing, Jack. Somebody bring me some refreshments.
There you go. He's been saving that. All right, we're out. We'll talk to you next week. Everyone take care. Thank you for listening to Jeff Burns Wrestling.